You are listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. This is Catherine Cruz. The governor is expected to announce more efforts to relax the COVID-19 restrictions, possibly later today. We talked with him Friday afternoon after learning of a petition signed by more than 450 doctors, health professionals, and others that was delivered to his office last week. Here's Dr. Jonathan Dworkin, a clinical infectious disease physician at Queen's, talking about their concerns.
I was involved pretty early on in clinical care, including for patients that came in with COVID. So one of the things that happened early on in the process was there was a lot of difficulty getting patients tested. There was diagnostic uncertainty. There was obviously a lot of treatment uncertainty. So we, as a group of doctors, just began talking to each other. And this letter is sort of the result of having formed an informal working group of physicians. Some of us are infectious disease physicians. Some of us are primary care. Some of us are public health epidemiology type people. And we've been talking to each other about various COVID-related issues for weeks now. And as the situation has improved, we've become increasingly concerned about, okay, what's the next step? What happens as Hawaii opens up? What happens as we allow more visitors to come into the islands? How can we make sure that the public health is protected and that the economic viability of the island is protected? So, you know, included in our group, it's mostly doctors, but we also have been liaisoning with Sumner LaCroix, who's an economist at UH, and we've also spoken to representatives of the nurses union, hospitality industry unions. We wanted to kind of create a group of people that are focused on both the economic and the public health issues and not pitting these things against each other.
Well, I know there are factions in the community that don't believe the governor is moving fast enough, and there's also another group that believes he's moving too fast, that we don't have things in place. So there's a bit of a dilemma there.
Yeah, it's not an envious situation for the governor to be in, and I feel for him. There's a narrative. I don't want to say it's a media narrative because I don't think it's really the media's fault. I think it comes from a very politically vocal subgroup and the narrative goes something like this. You know, these doctors and epidemiology types, you know, they just want to control infection and get it down to zero. And, you know, if that happens, it's going to kill us economically. It's going to cause all these downstream effects. We just need to open up. We need to do this now. And, you know, the notion that you're going to have a sustainable, healthy economic recovery while you're allowing uncontrolled transmission of an infectious disease in the community is frankly risible. It doesn't make any sense. And it's an experiment that's played out in other parts of the world already. And what we find is communities that don't control transmission have increased mortality because they have uncontrolled infection, and they take a very similar, if not greater, economic hit to the surrounding communities. So, you know, I reject that either-or way of phrasing it. I think we need to do both, and that's part of the purpose of forming the group that we did.
What are you calling for exactly?
There's a number of things in the letter. Some of it is reiterating positions that we staked out during an earlier letter, which we forwarded along to the governor's people several weeks ago. And, you know, the basic underpinning, I think, of any successful response is good public health. So we want, you know, testing, tracing, quarantine, and isolation. And we mentioned those things again in our letter. What makes this one a little bit different is we're also focusing on the visitor policies in particular. And what we want is a system in place in the airports that actually works in identifying, you know, who's coming in infected. And the concern we have is that, you know, we're going to end up with a kind of airport theater where there's a symptom-based screening or temperature-based screening that's not actually effective. And there are a number of studies that have been published looking at that system and have shown that it's not effective. So we don't want airport theater. We want a system that's actually going to make it safer so that when people come into the islands, they feel safe and they know that they're actually safe. And we think that that's going to be better for the local population, but also better for the economy.
And there have been calls for, you know, national testing, a national testing policy, and that doesn't appear to be happening. And so there are different groups, different lawmakers that have proposed different ideas about testing before people get on the planes. And, you know, what are the legal issues involved in that? Who should manage it? Should it be the airlines versus the state? How do we just open travel up safely?
I think there's a number of issues there, and there's a lot of technical things that need to be worked out. In our letter, we specifically talk about pre-travel test-based screening. So the idea would be that travelers would get a test taken before they board the airplane, and that everybody who's on that airplane would know that everybody else on the airplane has had a recent negative test. The technical issue that comes up is, okay, then we would need to validate that when they get to Hawaii. And for the system to be really effective, we would probably need a second test at some point after they land. And that would require, you know, an infrastructure investment in getting our testing capacity up, ideally at the airport or possibly at the hotels. Those are details that need to be worked out, and we think it would probably take at least a few weeks to work them out. So what we would like to do is start that process now, so that when our traveler numbers start to go up and we go from a couple hundred travelers to a couple thousand travelers, we have a system in place that's actually robust and that actually protects the state.
A couple of Republican lawmakers have come up with a framework in order to open Hawaii safely, and, you know, they're concerned because they're saying, you know, the travel bubbles that we establish with places like Japan and New Zealand aren't going to be fail-proof if you've got people coming in from Vegas or other places where there could be potential hotspots.
That's right. And the 14-day quarantine is sort of a backstop. So right now what we have is a 14-day quarantine, and if enforced reasonably well, which has been an issue, that is effective. The problem is it's a very heavy hand. To make everybody go through a 14-day quarantine really limits the number of people that are going to come. So a test-based strategy would be a way of exempting people from the quarantine. You know, we're not proposing that testing be required. We can't make people take a test. But what we can do is give them an exemption from a quarantine. And that would be the beauty of the system, is that people could test, come back, and then not have to stay in a hotel room for 14 days. Once they're in, they're in. There may be some post-travel step. That's something we would have to work out the details of. As I mentioned, to be effective, a second test would be ideal. But once you jump through the hoops, you're in and you can enjoy your vacation.
Right, so that's the carrot.
Correct.
We'll drop the 14-day if you take the test. And what, have them pay for it?
The payment issue, I think, could be worked out. I mean, there's funding, disaster relief funding, that could go into that. If someone is spending thousands of dollars on a vacation, it's not terribly unreasonable to have the person pay for it. We don't think that that should be an obstacle.
I believe the lieutenant governor has some ideas about randomly testing at the airport. What do you think about that?
I think it's a good first step. You know, I don't want to shoot down any test-based strategy. I think if it's only 20% or 30%, that's not likely to be effective. And again, I guess what I'm concerned about is that we'll end up in a situation where we have more of a PR strategy than an actual strategy. So, you know, if this is a first step towards a more comprehensive system, I think it would work. But if it's not leading towards anything, then we need to get it to the point where it is leading towards something, because it's already June and we need to start putting this in place now.
And critics of the health department have said that they're moving too slow.
The Department of Health has a difficult job. There's a lot of talent in the state of Hawaii to help think through the technical aspects of these problems. We have a number of really wonderful epidemiologists, some of them quite academic and world-renowned. There are people from the University of Hawaii and from outside the Department of Health that could help think through and work through this system and stand it up. But in order for that to happen, the state government would have to invite that help in. And, you know, I think the subtext to our letter is that's one of the things we're asking for, is a more open, you know, transparent conversation in which there's collaboration from inside the state government and from outside it.
And is there anything you can share just as an infectious disease specialist there at Queens, you know, with what you've seen with the cases come through there?
Yeah, what I can say is it was pretty hairy for a couple of weeks, and it definitely felt like a wave of cases. You know, it started out with one or two, and then we were at four, and then we were at eight, and then we were in the teens. And as the case numbers went up, a couple of units of the hospital began to fill up. We had some patients that were extremely sick. This is not a joke. This is a real disease. It makes people, you know, deathly ill. And fortunately, some of the measures that the governor put in place began to work. And just as quickly as we got hit, the wave began to recede. And now the task is to make sure that we never have a second wave, because I think that's what winning will look like. The whole purpose of the letter is to create some sunlight around these issues. We were concerned that a plan may be developed without real public vetting or without feedback from people in the epidemiology and infectious disease community. So, you know, this is an attempt to sort of say, hey, we're aware that this is coming. And what's the status of play? How can we help you set this up in a way that does not pit the economy against public health? Because we think that a successful response is going to be one that keeps infection rates down. And, you know, that's why we went out of our way to collaborate with people on the economic side of things, including, you know, the union reps and the economists at University of Hawaii. We really want a plan that takes everything into account. And we think that that's possible.
And just after that interview with Dr. Jonathan Dworkin, an infectious disease physician at Queens, we talked to Governor David Ige about the petition. He says he's open to their ideas.
You know, we are looking at reopening travel to the islands in a phased way. You know, we are focused on inter-island because, you know, the virus prevalence in every county is about the same now. And so we feel comfortable that flying inter-island wouldn't be spreading the virus or increasing the risk in any of the counties to a point that we wouldn't find it acceptable. Getting beyond Hawaii, then it gets tricky, right? I mean, we're focused in a couple of different ways. One is international because, you know, we have important international partners and looking to create transportation corridors to those communities with similar success in containing the virus. You know, in the U.S., there were 15,000 new COVID cases in the United States. In all of Japan, there were 33 yesterday, and in all of Korea, there was 35. So, you know, we're focused on international destinations where we see the virus activity very low, and that if we allowed travel to those areas without quarantine, we wouldn't be putting the public's health at risk.
But what about this notion of testing passengers before they get on the plane?
You know, certainly we're open and we're considering that. You know, Kathy, the challenge is that there's really no standard of, you know, what a test looks like. I mean, you know, if I said, yes, we want everyone coming in from California to have had a negative COVID-19 test in the 72 hours preceding your departure, you know, how would we know if it's a legitimate test or if someone just didn't go to the internet and create a certification form that says, yes, I took a COVID test and I'm negative? You know, how would we be able to judge whether the test is valid and accurate? And more importantly, you know, separate ones that were just made up and Xerox and ones that really were a real COVID test with a negative result.
We did talk with Representative Bob McDermott and Gene Ward about the framework that they were proposing to mm-hmm. do that and to allow the airlines then to be in charge of checking the tests. And we did talk with Hawaiian Airlines about that, and you know, they're you know, a little reluctant to jump into it because they don't know if they can legally block someone from getting on the plane, you know, without the negative test.
Sure. And, you know, and I know that representatives had said the FAA told them they could, but I haven't really seen that documentation. We keep trying to get a copy of it because if that is something that we can do, we certainly would want to be able to consider that.
Yeah, I think their idea was you get tested, maybe have the passenger pay the fee for the test so that when he comes to Honolulu, he or she comes to Honolulu, they can forego the 14-day quarantine.
That is a possibility. You know, we're trying to explore how that might work. The challenge is how do you validate a real negative test versus someone just making up a form and it being signed.
So what's your sense? Do you think you'll make a decision soon about whether we lift the Trans-Pacific restrictions?
So we're looking at bringing visitors from outside of Hawaii in phases. You know, we view the inter-island lifting of the inter-island quarantine as allowing us to test the system. You know, so we are requiring a new health form to be completed by every traveler. We're going to ask them to give us their name and residence address, what flight they're on and where they're going to, and then where they're staying in whatever the destination is, and then contact information so that we can talk with them or contact them via email so that should they get symptoms or should they become ill while they're traveling, we would be able to provide them health services as appropriate, test them if necessary, and then most importantly, you know, isolate them from other travelers or residents to keep our community safe.
You know, at one time, there was some discussion, I think, at the HEMA level about identifying hotels on each island. So if we needed to quarantine patients, that we could do that. Have those contracts been signed?
Yes, we do. And so we do have isolation hotels in each of the counties where if we do get someone who is a visitor and COVID positive, then we do have a place to put them. We're trying to establish new standards for the entire hospitality industry in the context of this new COVID-19 pandemic moving forward. So, you know, it's really acknowledging that there will have infectious diseases and really raise the bar about what's necessary. You know, it's very clear for us to continue to be the number one destination in the world. We have to up our game. And with the hotels, it means a couple things. You know, asking them to have an active education program about, you know, what a respectful and appropriate visitor would be doing, you know, besides the respecting our native Hawaiian culture and honoring our environment. Now, we're expanding that to include monitoring their health if they begin to get ill, to get services. Part of that would be new standards for hotels, visitor education, new sanitation and cleaning requirements, and then extending and making sure that they will be part of our network, our public health network, to educate their guests, to have them be part of the system, and then to share the information should someone get sick. And one of those new procedures and policies has to be what happens if someone becomes positive for COVID-19. And whether they house them in their facility or they make arrangements with another facility, you know, it's we don't care so much either way. But they should have a responsibility for taking care of the individual should they end up being COVID positive.
It's my understanding that Local 5, the Hotel Workers Union, and the Nurses Union has signed on to this petition. And I believe also the University of Hawaii economists have weighed in and signed the petition as well.
If there's a way that we could have that be a requirement and then be able to validate, you know, my concern as part of it is, you know, who's going to be responsible for making sure that the tests are legitimate and done by a certified laboratory and that we can count on the results, that those being tested and having a negative test are truly virus-free and won't be able to infect our community.
So that paper's got to mean something.
Yeah, it's got to mean something.
Okay.
I think that that's critical.
And to see the petition sent in by the Queen's doctors, head to our website at hawaiipublicradio.org later today. We will hear more from our conversation with the governor later in this hour, but we should add that just this morning, Congressman Ed Case introduced a measure to authorize states to impose additional restrictions on incoming passengers. Lots of developments around this very important issue.